All right, welcome back to Hacker Slacker. I'm Jacob Petticord.
And I'm Andre Garive.
And we got another show for you guys this week. We're going to be talking about decentralized transportation. Andre, you want to give us a rundown of the topics we're going to hit?
Yeah, so first we're going to hit some news stories that Jacob has for us, and then we're going to go over some of the history of bike share and other types of decentralized transportation. We're going to go over the lay of the land, like what companies there are, who's affiliated with who, what cities they're in, all that kind of stuff, and then some of the controversies with having them in these big cities. And we'll also say that today we are actually recording not in person together. It's Thanksgiving break. This will come out on Black Friday, so happy Black Friday. Maybe you're listening to it while you're waiting in line for shopping or whatever, but Jacob's in Kansas City and I'm here in Lincoln, so we are recording apart from each other.
Yeah, this is actually our first time not both being in the same room when we're recording.
Yeah, should be a pretty good one though.
Yeah, so I'm actually really excited about the topic today because these new decentralized transportation companies, they've come on like fast and they've grown like super valuable over the last year. So it's definitely been something that, like, if you're not super hooked into the tech scene and you don't live in a big city, you might not have noticed, but it's been like a super important trend this year to be keeping up with.
Yeah, at least three of the companies that we are going to talk about today are at unicorn status. And two of those companies were founded last year.
Yeah, so unicorn status means they're valued over $1 billion, which is like a kind of like hitting a home run in the startup world. So that'll be a great topic. But first, we're going to talk about some quick news. If you haven't been paying attention to the crypto market, another trend this year is that it's been free falling since January. There's been a lot of pieces about this recently because Bitcoin just recently is dropping close to $4,000 from its high of $20,000. So that's a massive fall, and the rest of the market has been following. And overall, since January, the digital asset market has lost around $700 billion of value. So it's not really looking good, and it is feeling like a lot of the naysayers who said that the crypto market was all hype and speculation, it's looking like they were right.
Yeah. We'll see if any of them put their money where their mouth was and shorted it, and maybe they'll make some money off of this.
Yeah. I was definitely part of the train that said these like aren't actual currencies, and therefore their value is purely based on speculation. So I never put my money into them, but I know some friends who made some money while I was on the way up. Your roommate actually did, right, Andre?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was kind of a crazy trend, but people are definitely coming down on it now. But one of the interesting things about this is that this year, two established like Wall Street firms have launched futures on the on Bitcoin, and trading of those futures has reached an all-time high. So like just this last week. So while the market's falling, volatility is rising, which means that people are still making money in this market. Traders are still trading off this volatility, even though the assets values are depreciating.
Yeah. You actually worked for Cboe, who did the first futures for Bitcoin, right?
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. They were actually in a rush to beat CME, their main competitor, from launching Bitcoin futures. Yeah, I was close to a company that did that, and they're seeing high volatility in those products, which is good for the companies who have those products because they make their revenue based off the trades. But it's kind of interesting to see that these assets, which I believe are entirely based on speculation, people are now making money on derivatives of those assets. So it's kind of just further and further down the rabbit hole and less about the viability of these things as currencies anymore. Okay, so our next story is about the new Galaxy phone. There was some leaks this week saying the headlines were that it's going to be 5G and have six cameras.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so the camera race is really on. People are going crazy. I think LG has a phone I saw in stores that had three cameras on the back of it. And I know they're not the only one who's done that, so it's just It's kind of crazy. So this is their 10th anniversary phone, kind of like how Apple made a big deal about the iPhone X. And it is supposed to have two cameras in the front and four on the back of it.
See, I don't understand this whole hype about putting a ton of cameras on the back. Because if you look, the best camera on any smartphone right now is just a single camera. In the Pixel 3, in the Pixel 3 XL. So putting four cameras on the back of one phone seems unnecessary, and like I would just smudge my fingers on it all the time, and making cases is more difficult. Like I just don't see any good reason to do it.
Yeah, I mean, God only knows how that's going to look on the back of the phone, first of all. So they're saying that all these cameras are for not only crisper photos, but for better spatial perception, which is a lot of that depth perception and blurring that we've seen with Apple and Samsung and Google. And one of the trends that we've seen, and something we've talked a lot about on the show, is how Google is kind of blowing the other companies out of the water with a single camera, doing it all in their software-only approach. And so it's kind of crazy to see Samsung quadrupling down on cameras by putting four on the back. So yeah, I mean, it's just kind of showing that these other companies who don't have the software like Google does, they're trying to compensate by just stacking more and more cameras. So, I mean, maybe it'll do something special, but I don't believe it.
Yeah, I think it'll just kind of look like an atrocity, but we'll have to see. Also, this is supposed to have 5G, right?
Yeah, so that's kind of a big deal. I don't know if it's launching in America. They're still in talk with carriers. Because this is supposed to launch, I think, March next year. So it's supposed to launch in, I think, South Korea with 5G. And Apple's not forecasted to have 5G in their phones until 2020. So we'll see how the 5G race ends up heating up.
Seem like we'll be there in the next couple of years.
Yeah, so we'll see if there's a big advantage with Samsung having phones ready for this. That could be a thing. The other big advantages that they're selling on this phone is that in-display fingerprint sensor that I was hoping was in the iPhone and that we've been seeing on some Android phones. I think that's pretty game-changing. And then the other thing is, the final thing I have is this reverse wireless charging feature, which is saying that you could use your Galaxy to charge another phone just by pressing them together.
Interesting. And I'm assuming that just uses the Qi standard?
Yeah, so, I mean, it just can act as a Qi charger and a Qi receiver.
Interesting.
I think there was something else that did that. I can't remember it off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure there's some other large Android phone that can do the same thing. But, yeah, so Samsung's trying some interesting things with their new devices. We talked last week about their foldable phones. So it'll be an interesting year. Just kind of a macro trend in the smartphone industry is handset sales are down like 8% this year. So I think companies are trying to pull out all the stops to see if they can fight this trend. But it might just be a natural trend where we're seeing a lot of the people who are going to buy smartphones have them. There's not many people converting to them anymore. And people are just not seeing the crazy improvements year over year. And they're just sticking with their phones for longer. So we'll see what the smartphone industry does and if manufacturers continue to fight this.
Yeah.
My last story that I have for you guys is, it's kind of funny. Someone spotted a guy walking around with an Apple Maps backpack, and out of the backpack were sticking a few poles and sensors. So there was cameras on it. There was a couple LiDAR detectors on it. It's a pretty funny looking picture. There'll be a link to it in the Mac Rumors article in the show notes. And they determined that this was Apple sending people out into the street to collect pedestrian data. So Apple confirmed that this is what they're doing. They're piloting it in six counties in California, and they're using it to get maps of paths, like public indoor places, and better foliage data.
Yeah, so I mean, that's one thing that Apple Maps just doesn't have, obviously, if they're adding it. And there are a lot of ways that Google Maps is better than Apple Maps. I use Google Maps even though I use an iPhone, and I know a lot of people that do the same. So it'll be interesting to see if this is part of a full overhaul on Apple Maps to try to make it more on par with Google Maps.
Yeah, this actually totally is. I don't know if we've talked about this on the show, but Apple has this like large scale push that they're doing to revamp their maps. Because previously they just purchased all their map data from map suppliers like TomTom. And now they're going out and building it on their own. And they're starting in California in the Silicon Valley area. And with comparisons between Apple Maps and Google Maps, this new strategy that they're doing of actually going out and collecting the data themselves appears to be paying off like significantly. Their maps are not only improving tenfold over what Apple Maps had before, but they're improving over what Google Maps has in a lot of places, like building placement and foliage. So there's been some cool articles about that. I would look up if you're interested in that sort of thing. But I'll definitely be letting people know when that gets outside of California and to the rest of the country, because they're making some big moves.
We could definitely even do a podcast about Apple Maps versus Google Maps at some point.
Yeah, there's some great articles out there about that, and it's a really interesting industry. I actually heard it referred to as the locations of things industry recently, which I thought was kind of cool. LOT. But yeah, it's a, I think someone said it's projected, or it is like a $20 billion industry right now. So there's definitely a lot to be said on that topic, more than we're going to cover in a single news story. But yeah, someone saw someone with an Apple Maps backpack, which I thought was kind of cool.
All right, let's get to our main topic. We're going to talk about decentralized transport. So that's like bike shares and scooter shares and car sharing, all those kind of things where you keep some sort of transportation just in a city street, and then somebody picks it up and takes it where they need to go and just leave it there. So we've got a whole lot of stuff. We're going to go over the history and what companies there are, and then some of the controversies with them. So let's start with the history. The first bike share program was actually started in 1965 in Amsterdam. The Provo Group, it's like an anarchist political movement, painted 50 bikes white and let people use them for free. Just ride them around Amsterdam.
That's the interesting beginnings. But yeah, you can definitely see the same ideas behind it. Just kind of letting people get around when they need it and not have to like own the bike yourself. But yeah, it's interesting to see this progression.
Yeah. And then in Copenhagen in 1995, a coin system bike share was started with about 300 bikes, I think. And you just like put coins into a machine and it lets you use the bike. I will also say with that first one in 1965, so many of the bikes were stolen that it was just a massive failure. So those didn't go well that great until 1996. There was a magnetic stripe card that you could use to help access the bikes. So you could essentially track them by knowing who checked out the bike and then whether or not it was actually returned. So that's getting more similar to what we have today. And a lot of this is coming from a really awesome interactive history site from CityLab. We'll definitely link that in the show notes, but it's really awesome just looking through all of this. So you can kind of see all of the history here. And you see from between 1996 and the mid-aughts into the 2010s, it spread around Europe and then into Canada and then finally into America. And now we're getting to the point where we are today, where we have the two big ones, Bird and Lime, and then also Spin. Spin was actually acquired by Ford 2 weeks ago, so we'll talk about that.
So the pre like 2017 companies, like these types of bike sharing, those were mostly docked companies, weren't they? Like,
yes.
So you go up to they have these in Lincoln. You go up to the dock and you like can use the app on your phone or use a card, or like you were saying, put a coin in and take it out of the dock. And then when you're done, you have to bring it back to a dock. And then so the real transition was with these companies you just mentioned.
Yeah. So now we have companies like Bird and Lime. I think those are going to be the two big ones that we focus on. Probably a lot of you have heard about these, but these are the decentralized bike share companies that we're talking about. So Bird actually uses scooters. Lime uses bikes primarily. Lime also has some scooters.
And cars we mentioned last week.
Yes, and some cars now. So let's talk about Bird. Bird is the biggest one right now. It was founded in September 2017, so it is barely a year old, by a former Uber and Lyft executive, Travis VanderZanden. They're based in San Jose, and they are a unicorn. They're valued at $2 billion right now. And they're just electric scooters that you kind of leave wherever. So you go up, you have the app, you scan the QR code, you can ride the electric scooter around anywhere. And they are charged by people who work like gig economy type jobs, where they just pick them up and they take them to what's called a Nest. And that Nest will charge them. And so these workers are paid to take them to the Nest. They're paid a certain amount per scooter, and that's how they're charged. And then they get put back out in the city.
Yeah. So this was pretty revolutionary. Like, before this, you kind of were relying on having a bike rack close to you and having available spots at that rack. So, what these companies have done is just kind of cut out the rack and just say like, hey, you can leave these bikes and these scooters all across the city. Like, we don't care where you leave them. We have GPS in them, and they have batteries. And so that way our employees can, or not employees, basically the Uber drivers Bird and Lime will come around, like move them around, recharge them, that sort of thing, and get paid to do that. And then you as the user just walk out of your work. You're trying to get home, trying to get to the subway station, look at your phone, see there's a bike one block around the corner, and then you can hop on that bike and get out of there. I mean, it's pretty revolutionary compared to having to use a bike rack. But one of the big trends we saw earlier this year was that cities just started to get fed up with all of these scooters littered everywhere and started to limit the amount of scooters and the companies that have permits to run these sorts of businesses in their cities.
Yeah, so that's one of the big controversies, is that since they're decentralized, people can just kind of leave them anywhere. So this summer, actually, there was a pilot program in Seattle for bike sharing, and there were three big companies, I believe, that were there. Ofo was the one I used when I was in Seattle this summer, but they also had Lime, and I do not remember which other company was there. But it might have been through Motivate, which we'll talk about later. But these bike share companies do essentially the same thing as the scooters. Lime is also a unicorn company. They're valued at $1.1 billion this year, and they were started in January of 2017. So they're almost 2 years old. And they've actually signed a deal with Uber to provide bikes for them, because Uber is trying to get into this sort of bike share space, as well as Lyft. Because if you can call a car, but it might be more efficient for you to use a bike, Uber wants to tell you, hey, it is either going to be greener or easier or healthier for you to just take a bike to wherever you're going.
Yeah.
And maybe it's cheaper too. If you go back and listen to the pod I did way early in the in Hacker Slacker history, I did one where I went to a talk by Uber CEO Dara Khosrowshahi, and he gave a talk about how the bikes are kind of changing the way Uber is working. And I talked a bit about this there too. So Uber has acquired Jump, which is another bike share company, and then signed deals with other bike share companies in order to provide the bikes.
Yeah, and Jump was a big name in terms of like having contracts with cities for these sorts of things for their bike stations. So it was interesting to see Uber acquire them. And a lot of the way Uber and Lyft talks about these things is that they don't just want to be car hailing services. They want to be companies that represent the future of transportation. So whether that means like these crazy flying car projects they're working on, or like just electric decentralized bikes, they're going for everything. So it's kind of led to some high value acquisitions. And I've actually, to your point about the pilot programs for the bikes in Seattle, I've actually been in Seattle twice this semester, and I've seen Lime bikes everywhere, and I haven't seen the other two. But yeah, Lime bikes all over the place.
Yeah, the other two actually ended their permits. So the others after the pilot program did not renew their permits that they had for the pilot program. So now it's just Lime in Seattle.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's definitely what I was saying. But I mean, I think definitely outside of every Starbucks, which if you know Seattle is like basically every block, there was always a Lime bike. And then pretty much just like, I don't know, it was hard to get from point A to point B without seeing at least a few bikes.
So another big name in transportation is Lyft, who bought Motivate, which is actually the biggest bike share company in the world. They account for 80% of U.S. bike share trips, albeit not all of those are decentralized. A lot of these are citywide, just docked bike share programs. So City Bike in New York or Go Bike in San Francisco. They also have bike sharing in Chicago, Boston, D.C., Portland, Columbus, and Minneapolis. So that company isn't decentralized, but Lyft is definitely trying to get into the business of bike share.
One of the big things about these docked bike companies is that they're very reliant on deals with cities so that they can place these permanent docking stations everywhere. It's not like you can just have a bunch of cities come in and dump bike docks all around. These things are like cemented into the ground. So that's one of the big differences with these decentralized companies is that they started out just kind of dumping their scooters all over town. And now cities are starting to regulate it more and make it more like the docked ones.
Yeah. And a lot of people really do not like the decentralized transportation because they're all over the place. They just take up room in the street. If you have more than like three people riding them at once, you take up most of the sidewalk. I know when I was in Seattle, we had like six or eight of us all riding the OFO bikes around the entire city. And some people thought it was funny, called us a biker gang. And some people got very mad at us for we went in a straight line. But that did mean we had like eight people riding bikes in a straight line down the busy sidewalks of Seattle. So not always a great thing for the cities. But I do think it's good for getting around in a healthier, more efficient, cheaper, and greener way.
It's definitely been controversial this year. The people who think that they just kind of trash up the cities, they're unsafe, that sort of thing, versus the argument of like it's a greener way to get around than taking a car.
There's another big company in the decentralized market, which is Spin. I actually had not heard much about Spin. Oh, that is, I'll put that in there as well. The Spin is that third company I was talking about in Seattle. So they actually debuted last year, although they were founded in 2016. So they started in Seattle, and they have these bright orange bikes. It's essentially the exact same thing, but they were acquired by Ford 2 weeks ago. So Ford is actually also trying to get into it. So you see that not only are the ride-sharing companies trying to get into bike share, but as the traditional type of motor companies are also trying to get into bike share.
Yeah, everyone wants a piece of the future of transportation, right?
Yeah.
And Ford is actually a company that does some interesting things with their, like, they have, like, an accelerator program and stuff, so it's not that surprising that they're trying to get into this hot new industry, but it's pretty cool to see like all this action. But
so we've already talked about the controversies of having the bikes all over the place, but another thing is helmet laws, because there are certain cities that say you have to be wearing a helmet when you're on these bike share or scooters. Some have none, but they really don't have any effect. Not all that many people actually wear helmets because nobody really thinks, oh, hey, I may or may not bring or end up riding a bike share bike at some point today. Maybe I need to bring a helmet. And if you have just a small backpack, you'll have to like hook it onto your bag and it can be just a huge hassle. So I know a lot of people don't actually wear any helmets, even if their cities have that law. But I've also seen that a lot of cities have been taking away those laws.
Yeah, it's not like the helmets stay attached to the bikes or anything. So because you have to bring your own, it's not like super convenient. And one of the bigger like implication, like one of the reasons why you would want a helmet is because in a lot of cases, it's actually technically illegal to ride these scooters or like motorized bikes on the sidewalks. And you're supposed to be riding them in the streets. And if you are going to be riding them in the streets, you should definitely be wearing a helmet. So
yeah,
it's just kind of the laws weren't really built with this type of transportation in mind. And in a lot of cases, neither is like the sidewalk infrastructure and that sort of thing. So there's also been talk about cities like redesigning for this kind of transportation, which I think is interesting.
Yeah. What I find interesting is we go to college here in Lincoln, and I think Lincoln would be the perfect place for a decentralized bike share system. We're one of the friendliest biking cities in the country. We have bike lanes all over downtown, leading all around the entire city, into the suburb parts of the city even. So I think it would be really great if we had that, but we did just get Bike LNK, which is our docked version, which we talked about earlier, that is not as great because you do have to return them to the docks and you can only ride them for like 30 minutes at a time. But it's a start.
Yeah, so Bike LNK actually has a pretty good deal for students where it's $10 for an entire year of a limited 30-minute rides. So I have that plan, and the main use of it is for kind of traveling in the specific like Haymarket part of town, because that's where most of the docks are. So one of my big uses for that recently has been going downtown for basketball games. I can get down to the arena in probably like 5 minutes versus like the 20-minute walk that it used to be.
Yeah, and you and I actually talked about that because I go to a lot of basketball games too. I didn't realize that there were docks that made it easier to get down there. So I think the next time I go to a basketball game, I'll definitely have to try it out because I do also have that subscription.
Yeah, no, I've really liked, I don't know, it kind of feels good to just hop on the bike and then be able to dock it and forget about it. I did have one experience where I was going to the basketball game, pulled the bike into the dock, and then it didn't register that I'd redocked it. So it kind of showed that my trip was still running and I couldn't get it back out. So it got like locked in place and not registered that I returned it, which was a little frustrating, but customer support was really nice. As soon as I found their phone number, it was pretty smooth from there. I just kind of talked to someone on the phone and said like, oh, I returned this bike here. It's in this gate, but it said I didn't. And then they were like, okay, like, what time did you put it back in there? And they kind of reset my time back to that and marked it as returned. So it was pretty painless. And so all in all, I would definitely rate BikeLink and like those similar services pretty highly. Like, I think they're pretty cool.
Yeah. I would love to see, though, if we could get like Lime bikes, because as well as having really great bike paths around the regular downtown area, in the Haymarket area where the streets aren't quite as wide, the sidewalks are actually really wide. And then there's also like a little brick part too. So it wouldn't be a terrible mess of bikes because there are places to put them all across the Haymarket area, which is like separate downtown from downtown. So whether you're in downtown or the Haymarket, which is where I'm assuming most of these bikes would end up, there's a place to put them.
Yeah, and like you said about our trail system in Lincoln, it's kind of crazy. You can actually go to Omaha all the way on bike trails, which is like an hour drive away. I'm coming from Kansas City, and in Kansas City we have a pretty good trail system by my house. Like Shawnee Mission Park is one of like the biggest county parks in the country, and I was like thinking like, oh, I'll come to Lincoln and like have to deal with worse trails, but after like using them training for a half marathon this semester, I've been wildly impressed. Like, you can go for as long as you can run on these trails, and I'm sure bike too. Like, it's pretty cool. I like that a lot about the city.
Yeah. So, back to the topic, all of these controversies are just kind of a part of new technologies. What's interesting is when you think new technologies, pilot programs, the city you think is San Francisco. San Francisco has all the new tech. Everybody tests everything out there because that's where everything's based. That's where a lot of technologists are. There's a lot of people. It's just kind of the perfect city to test things out in. But they've actually banned all of these decentralized transportation.
Yeah, they were the first city to get it and the first city to legislate it out. I don't think that they banned all of it. Like, I think that there's like 1,500 scooters allowed in the downtown area or something like that, right?
Yeah, but it's definitely far less prevalent than when you look in like LA or other cities before they banned them, or cities that still have them even.
Yeah, I would say that they definitely just like super heavily regulated and limited the number of bikes, which is them doing what they think is best for the city. And I don't know, I'm not from San Francisco, so I can't really tell how big of a problem it was.
Yeah. I will say I was in the Bay Area for the summer, and I went to Seattle for about 3 days, and the 3 days in Seattle, I saw more bike share bikes and scooters and all that than I did in San Francisco the entire of the summer. It's definitely regulated to a point where it's not something people think about in San Francisco. And then there are some cities that have outright banned it, like Denver and Nashville, because it's not good for a city that's not ready for it.
Yeah. So I think we've kind of covered most of the controversies around this, right?
Yeah.
So to kind of talk about my personal experience with these things, in Kansas City, they have Bird. So I've seen the scooters around, and I've never like had an excuse to ride one. And I saw them in Seattle a lot. Never had an excuse to use one there either. Have you ridden anything outside of the Lime bikes in Seattle?
No, I haven't. All I've done is the bike shares in Seattle when I was there. But, actually, when I got back to Mountain View after being in Seattle, I was on like a free trial for all the bike share programs. And there were like two bike share bikes at the Google campus. So I tried one out. And then I just stopped because of Google has G bikes for employees to ride around when you need to. Yeah. So there was no point.
Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, in Lincoln, we have the Bike LNK, which we talked about a bunch. But yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting to see how these new ideas for transportation evolve and see if they end up affecting the way cities' infrastructure is built. Like if we start seeing more bike lanes, like scooter lanes, that sort of thing, to support this new trend.
Yeah. And when you kind of look at the companies that are getting into it, you kind of realize that we're getting to a point where all of our transportation will be either automated or decentralized. I don't know if it's in 5 years or 10 years or 15 years or whenever, but I see a future where you're either going to pick a bike up off the street or you're going to call a self-driving Uber that's just kind of driving around waiting for somebody to call it.
Yeah. One of the crazy things about this trend that I don't really hear talked about that much is that I don't think there was anything that happened like mid-2017, early 2018 that was like a technology shift that made this possible. I feel like the like GPS chips and batteries and electric scooter technology and iPhone applications, like all of this has been around for like 5 years now. It's kind of crazy that all of this hit so hard and so fast over the last like year and a half.
You kind of got to assume that some VC decided to finally invest money in one of these companies, and then every other VC got on board too, and now there's all this money in it.
It's definitely inspiring, though, to see like people combining these existing technologies to kind of sprout a new industry that's transforming transportation, you know? Like it makes you...
For sure.
There's like a lot of talk about how it's so hard to come up with new ideas now, which, I mean, I think it's BS, and I think that this is evidence like to that point, you know? So yeah, I really enjoyed like watching this industry, and we'll definitely keep you updated with the big stories about it. But I think this has been one of the coolest stories of 2018, is seeing like these companies just skyrocket in value and spread everywhere like weeds, you know?
Absolutely.
So yeah, I think that's all for this episode.
Yeah.
Pretty short, short and sweet holiday episode for you guys. It's a little difficult because me and Andre have both had like one heck of a week, so we didn't have a lot of time to prepare for this one. I was actually up until 2 doing homework last night, so yeah, it's been quite hectic, but now we're on break and we're gonna enjoy it, and I hope you do too. Yep. So this has been another episode of Hacker Slacker. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, bye. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at HackersPod, or send us any messages you have, questions, comments, whatever, at hackerslackerpod@gmail.com. Rate and review us on iTunes, Google Podcasts, whatever. And we'll see you next week.
See you.